Jack Herrera has covered Latino voters in America for years, including here at CJR, and he saw this coming. In January, Herrera went to Iowa, where he noticed a lingering dissatisfaction among Latinos with President Biden and the direction of the country. In July, he was in the Rio Grande Valley, reporting on how support for Trump among Latinos had gone from edgy counterculture to a dominant political force. And in the weeks before the election, he was in Redden, Pennsylvania, a city that's nearly 70% Latino, learning just how far behind the Kamala Harris ground game was. Herrera is my guest today to talk about what it's been like to cover the Latino swing towards Trump, and why it's about more than just what the Republicans have to offer. It's also about what Democrats no longer seem willing to say. You can read Herrera's profile of Lorena Lopez, the editor of La Prensa, a Spanish-language newspaper in Iowa, at cjr.org. Jack, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, good to be on the show.
What just happened?
You know, I think there's something to be said. I've been talking to a lot of friends who, you know, it's like, hey, how are you feeling about the election? And it's this time around, whatever your politics are, it feels less shocking that Trump won. Like 2016, I think, you know, most Republicans went to bed that night not expecting Trump to win the next day. And so it's sort of less shocking. And I think maybe there's some elements of that with the Latino vote. In 2020, Trump, that was the year it was really stunning, the gains he made. There were places like Stark County, for instance. I spent some time there again this summer. Spent a lot of time there the last 4 years. It's the most Latino county in the country.
That's in the Rio Grande Valley, right?
So it's in between the Rio Grande Valley and Laredo, right on the Texas border, right on the Rio Grande.
Okay.
Most Latino place in the entire country outside of Puerto Rico. So it's 97% Latino. It's more Mexican than some places in Mexico. And in 2020, between 2016 and 2020, Trump quadrupled turnout there. Four times as many people voted for Republicans in 2020 than they had in 2016. Democrats had enough of a big enough lead there. They'd been winning by like 80% of the vote that Biden still scraped out a win. He won, I think, with like 52% of the vote. But that was stunning, right? That was shocking. And it sort of, I mean, I knew, I think that me and other reporters reporting these communities were like, I think, and some people like Julian Castro, for instance, were like, hey, there's some worrying signs here. Like Democrats might not be able to rely on a huge Latino vote, huge Latino turnout. And I don't think anyone was like prepared for that sort of shift where you have like, you know, 20 point jump, 50 point jumps towards the Republicans. So like, I feel like maybe this is less shocking, but it's still stunning to look at the map, Josh. Like I looked at the map for South Texas of who'd won. And these are counties that have voted Democrat since the Civil War. That's not hyperbole. Like they've always voted Democrat, and Trump swept. He flipped pretty much every county along the border. There's some tiny exceptions, like smaller counties, and he was able to Democrats were able to hold on to El Paso, but the most Latino places, not just in Texas but in the country, huge, enormous gains for Trump. He's winning there now. Sometimes he's like winning handily with over 60%. Same story in Miami, right? And the most Latino places in Florida. You know, it flipped in 2020, and now he's just running up the score. And so it's really eye-opening, right? And the argument on everyone's mind is like, is this political realignment? Like, are Latinos now a swing vote, or are they just going to move towards the Republicans? If this trend line continues, they're just going to be solidly red in 2028, right?
We don't have the answer necessarily to the future, but what we're seeing for certain is that what happened in 2020 was not some one-time fluke, right? This was a continuation of that trend. And so for you as someone who watched it then, you're not as shocked that it continued.
Yeah. It wasn't. I mean, fluke in the sense like, oh, we get this crazy result. It's an outlier. And then kind of the trends go back to normal in 2024. Not at all. Like that was not a fluke. Like the trend continued. Like the line looks just as steep even. And so that's true. I mean, but, you know, this is it's the CJR podcast. So I'm going to shout out, you know, the value of on the ground reporting, which is that if you look at the numbers, what you see is evidence of a grand ideological shift, like a true transformation of people's political sense of themselves and sense of what they want in a place like South Texas. When you go report from the ground, That's not the story. I'm not saying that's not an element. There are people who, like, you know, who were not Republican 4 or 8 years ago, who are not, you know, didn't share Trump's values 4 or 8 years ago, who now do and do passionately. But that's just not, that doesn't explain the whole shift here. That's not the whole, that's not how people talk. It's not, doesn't quite capture it.
Well, maybe we should talk about some of the places where you did report, because you had just, I mean, I have to say, looking at the stories you did over the course of just this year alone, you were in Pennsylvania, you were in Iowa, you were in Texas. I mean, you were covering the story across the country. It's really impressive. And one of the more recent places you went to was Redden in Pennsylvania. It's the fourth largest city in the state, and it's 70% Latino, which I guess I didn't realize. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what you saw there, because this was a story that came out, you know, late in the race. And you were saying essentially that potentially the Kamala Harris campaign had missed the chance to rally potentially Latino voters there.
That was the most eye-opening reporting I did over the whole cycle. I think a big part of the story, like why did Texas, Latinos in South Texas and Florida, why did they shift so far right? Part of the story there is a strategic surrender from the Democrats. They looked at the map and they're like, you know what? We are not winning Florida. We are not winning Texas. So why send personnel? Why send troops and treasure to go try and win back Latinos in those states if we're not going to win this? Well, there's no way we're going to win Texas anyway. Like, who cares if Republicans run up the score? Like, they can win the battle. We're trying to win the war. So let's send that money to Pennsylvania and Arizona and Nevada and Georgia and the blue wall states. And so I think that's a big part of the story. Like, Texas and Florida shifted far right because Democrats didn't really compete there. So you'd expect a different story in the swing states. And so I get to Redden and I'm like, Kamala's going to be fighting here, right? Like, this is where Democrats are going to make their stand.
Right.
70% Latino voted for their Democratic mayor. He's a Puerto Rican American mayor. He was elected 4-1 last year. So it's a place we know Democrats can win. And I get there and I talk to the mayor, Eddie Moran. And I talked to Manuel Guzman, and I talked to Johanny Cepeda Frias, you know, all these sort of local representatives, like the mayor, two state house reps. And they're all telling me, like, Kamala's getting outplayed here. Trump has been through twice. J.D. Vance was just here. Tucker Carlson was here. Like, Alex Jones, Jack Posbacher here. Like, all sort of the Republican luminaries are coming through. And they opened up their office right in the center of downtown. And on the Puerto Rican Day Parade, they were tabling. They were signing people up, registering people to vote. They are making a play here. And Harris isn't. She hasn't come through. Like, she hasn't campaigned here. And the local Democrats are doing what they can. But the national and the state party, that's not where they're focusing their energy. They didn't ignore it. It's not like it got no resources. But that was not the focus of the campaign. So Trump really had the opportunity to sort of run wild. Democrats sort of didn't have their defenses up there.
What's the message that's resonating? I mean, from the story, you say that just like the rest of the country, which I think maybe is the most important clause in the whole piece, the economy was the top issue for Latino voters.
That is the story of this election. And we can tell, like, the fact that Latinos were already shifting right in 2020 means that there's a bigger story to tell. But the simplest, the quickest explanation for why Trump did so well, not just among Latinos, but among Black men and white men and white women and Asian voters and people who went to college, people who didn't go to college, people like, he just improved in every demographic group. And it's because inflation, that is the story, like COVID and inflation. Every incumbent party around the world, you know, like the, you know, conservative parties in Japan or the conservative parties in Britain, but then also like left-wing parties in other countries, if you are the incumbent during the post-COVID inflation, you lost your job the next time you kind of came up for election. Voters just really, really hate inflation. And most Latinos, like, there's disproportionate number of us are working class, disproportionate number of us are living paycheck to paycheck. And so, like, those effects of inflation and increased housing and increased gas prices were just more keenly felt in Latino communities. And so that gives him an opening in those areas.
Did Garbage Island, I mean, since this was something that came out around the time that you were putting that story out, so you, I know in some of your messages, your posts on X, you were connecting them a little.
Yeah.
Did that whole thing that happened, was that a mirage? I mean, was that just not a real phenomenon in terms of affecting votes?
Yeah, so this is in like Madison Square Garden, like a rally Trump holds in New York the week before the election. Tony Hinchcliffe, I think, is the comedian, says like, "Hey, there's an island of garbage in the ocean. Have you heard about this? It's called Puerto Rico." I mean, it's a racist joke. It's like an unforced error. If he picked a different island, it would have been maybe a funny joke. But basically, just like an unbelievable unforced error, like unbelievably and unnecessarily offensive to the exact voters you're trying to win in Puerto Rico. The majority of Latinos in Puerto Rico, there's over a billion of them. Something like 500,000 of them are Puerto Rican. And so that's just like, that was that on paper, it's like, what on earth did you just do? And the reporting I've seen is that Trump himself was like, shoot, like, are we screwed? Like, we need to fix this. Like, let's go damage control. And so they trotted out a bunch of Latino surrogates and all that.
And there was reporting on, you know, in mainstream publications that suggested clearly optimistically that this was having a major impact, that there was a real upsurge, right? Like,
yeah, there was a big vibe shift that week, right? Like, yeah. I think the Democrats were feeling not that confident going into the election. And then it's like, oh, Trump did it again. Like, he, you know, this is X is Hollywood, or this is like he unforced error. We're back in this game, baby. I mean, I haven't had the time to look at precinct level data and connect that to, you know, where are the most Puerto Rican neighborhoods, most Puerto Rican precincts, and like, how do they vote and things like that. But from the numbers we have so far, Latinos didn't show up in huge numbers in Pennsylvania, or Puerto Ricans don't seem like they showed up in huge numbers to vote against Trump. And even if they had, it wasn't enough to make a difference in Pennsylvania. But I mean, I won't claim to have more reporting and more knowledge than I have. I don't know what the effect of that joke was. If you're asking for my gut based on my reporting, I just don't think one joke makes as big a difference as the months of groundwork that the Trump campaign was doing in a place like Redden. It was doing with Puerto Rican voters in Pennsylvania. I'm a skeptic that that was a meaningful juncture in the election.
Well, I think where your reporting comes in, and maybe it's sort of a broader way of looking at this, but you know, I think what you're essentially saying is that there wasn't a sense that racism or anti-immigrant rhetoric, which certainly the latter tremendous amount came from the Trump campaign, that sunk in to Latino voters on a significant level, causing them to vote against him. In fact, many people did not consider fighting racism a particularly significant part of what they did. And I think you quoted someone saying that there are Democrats who are racist and there are Republicans who are racist. And that's just how it is.
Yeah. In Stark County, I spoke to a woman who was like, yeah, they're racist Republicans, they're racist Democrats. It's a racist country. And honestly, like I on a personal level, I know that's true. I do think that like, if you, I think that being anti-Mexican or being anti-Latino, like, I think that we just know from polling, we know for a fact that like Republicans, that is a greater predictor of like somebody being bigoted against Latinos. There are more of those types of people in the Republican Party. That's not me making some argument. That's just like, you see it in the polling. I'm not saying all Republicans feel that way. Certainly they don't. Certainly many Republicans are Latino. This is all actually exposition towards the point, which is that that woman told me that, this teacher, Ms. Perez. And so I'm like, yeah, no, I hear you. But I do think the Republicans are more, typically tend to be more racist. Like Trump, you know, no Democrat has been like, oh, you know, they're not sending their best. They're sending rapists. They're sending, you know, whatever. No Democrat said that. But I got to say, after, you know, in the last week, I've seen some ugly stuff from Democrats. You know, like Twitter's not real life, but, and people are emotional this week, but saying like, oh, well, you know, Latinos voted for Trump. They deserve to get deported. Like, he's going to deport them all and they're going to pay the price for what they did. And that's, seeing a lot of that, which again, like, you think like, how do Democrats win back these votes in 2026 and 2028? That's not it. That's not going to be helpful.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit through this idea that like, it didn't penetrate as a major issue for the Latino vote? Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that the lesson we learned in 2020 is that Latinos are not single issue voters when it comes to immigration, and are not single issue voters when it comes to racism. Like, those are not the main priorities of how people vote. The economy and healthcare, almost always, just those are the top two, but it's always the economy in top one. That's why people vote. And so people vote, you can say like, they vote strategically. Latinos vote strategically. Like, I spoke to a woman in Iowa in January who's like, yeah, I think Trump's racist. I think he says racist stuff. And I don't love how he talks about immigrants, but like, first, I think he's more authentic. Like, I think he keeps promises in the way the Democrats always break them. But also, he just fed up the economy. We were richer in 2019 than we are now. So we're going to vote for him. And so that's how a lot of people vote. Mm. I think that the Democrats then learned the wrong lesson in 2020, or learned the right lesson, but took it too far, which is they're like, okay, the identity-based appeal, identity politics, they're like, tu perteneces aquí, you know, like you belong here, like, you know, todos con Biden, like we're all in this together, the sort of like welcoming message for immigrants. They're like, that failed. So let's just like, let's drop the identity politics stuff. And let's go right. We're going to move far to the right on immigration too. And what I spoke to Carlos Odio, who's like a pollster researcher, founded Equis, this really, really well-run, sophisticated polling firm who's like focus group testing with Latinos. And he made the point that immigration's in the past has never been a top issue. It's always been a consequential issue. And he said it's like where people draw the line in the sand, where it's like whatever your other top issues are, immigration always kind of helped you know which party you belong with. Like if you want a welcome for immigrants, if you don't like xenophobia, most of the time that means you're with the Democrats and vice versa. And this election, he's like now you don't have that message. Like Democrats aren't doing like you're welcome, like the Republicans are racist. Yeah. You know, like you should stick with us for, you know, a welcome, more tolerant society and a greater welcome for immigrants. Kamala wasn't making that pitch. And she couldn't because they moved far to the right on immigration. And she was, you know, somewhat smartly being like sort of like woke politics or like the identity politics, like the sort of Latinx, et cetera, like didn't play well in 2020. I think that's true. So they basically abandoned it completely. But here's the problem is like, if you want, you're saying like, hey, like Latino voters, don't think about your ethnicity and like, don't think about racism and don't think about immigration, welcoming immigrants when you go into the voting booth. Just think about the economy.
Yeah.
Is that really what you wanted people thinking when they went to the voting booth in 2024? Like, vote for who you think's better on the economy. Democrats wanted that to be a winning message for them, but it just wasn't this year. Like, people are in such a bad, bad mood about the economy the last 4 years. And so basically, you just have very little to offer Latino voters if you're not going to do the immigration stuff, you're not going to do the identity politics stuff. So I think the lesson for Democrats going forward is, yes, the economy is a top issue. Appeal to people in the economy, workers' rights, working class, you know, blue collar dignity, blue collar workers getting a fair shake. Like that's, yes, that's just economic populism. Absolutely. That's the main thing. But why would you give up what has historically been your greatest advantage for Latinos, which is that like, hey, the other party's racist. Like we're not. Like, and again, I'm, you know, that's how I'm quoting Democrats in that sort of conceptualization of the parties, but like that's been their pitch historically and they gave it up. And it's like, it's giving up your one of your greatest weapons in these elections, and they sort of just decided that they weren't going to win with that anymore, and they didn't have anything else to offer.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because one of the impressions I get, partially from your reporting but from other stories around this subject that I've read, is that it seems like the immigration issue in particular just isn't as big an impact with some of these Latino voters who are voting for Trump. They are aware that people who look like them or maybe are related to them are at risk of being deported, but there's like a separation they're making or a dissociation or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you encountered that. I mean, how does that happen? Where does that come from? And how big of a phenomenon is that?
I mean, every Latino who's voting in this election is a citizen, right? Like that's, if you vote, you're a citizen. And so I think once you're a citizen, I think that there is basically very little natural solidarity between somebody who's an immigrant, who's a citizen, and like the newest arrivals. Maybe there's more sympathy there than like somebody who's, you know, deeper in generations or something like that. But there's just, I think that what I'm saying is there's plenty of Latinos who don't like immigrants and are, you know, like full stop xenophobic. And then there's another set of them who do like immigrants, want more immigrants, but really don't like unauthorized immigration. Or like, I really had to struggle to get my visa, to get my residency, to get my green card, to get my citizenship. You're cutting the line. Like, there are all these people who showed up who cut the line while I was waiting. That's an attitude that exists in the community. There are even undocumented people, right, who are like, I do not like that Biden has given parole status and in some instances work permits for people in the asylum process who showed up in the last 4 years. When I've been here 20, 30 years working my ass off, like, you know, working undocumented, like waiting for my pathway to citizenship that Democrats kept promising and it never came. And so there is that sort of anger. But I do think that I think that there, again, like that would make you think that like Latinos are actually like kind of anti-immigration or want stricter immigration policies. I don't know. I think there's definitely a population like that, but I basically think that there used to be this pull, like a magnetic kind of pull to two directions. Like if you don't like immigrants, you're voting for Republicans. If you do like them, you're voting for Democrats. And in this election, it's like the magnet like faded. Like they don't, the Democrats, like, you know, if you like immigrants, you vote for us. They just don't have that credibility anymore. They shifted far to the right under Biden after the border surge. I think too that like they just can't credibly make this promise anymore, sort of, oh, path to citizenship, we're going to take care of the domestic undocumented, because they've been making that promise for 8 years under Obama, 4 years under Biden, and they've failed utterly each time. They haven't even really given it a shot. There's like I'm talking to like people voting Republican now who are like, you know, I do want more welcome to immigrants. I don't want deportation. But you know what? Democrats aren't going to do anything about it either. So I'm just not, I just don't care about that issue going into the election because both parties are basically the same. Like Carlos Odio put it, he's like, what he hears in focus groups is people say, oh, Democrats make all these promises and don't do any of it. And they say they're going to do these great things, and they don't do it. Republicans say they're going to do all these awful things and they don't do that either. So, you know, I'm just not going to, I don't care what these people are saying about immigration. I just don't vote on that issue.
What you're saying reminds me a lot of Lorena Lopez, who you profiled for us at CJR and wrote about elsewhere too. And she's the editor of La Prensa, which is a Spanish language newspaper in Iowa. And she talks about that exactly, right? She talks about that pervasive, longstanding sense of frustration at Obama's empty rhetoric and a feeling of a divide between the immigrants there who worked really hard to get what they had and were seeing people who they at least perceived as getting free work permits and easy access to the country. And she said to you and to me, she came on the pod at some point, she said that they're going to vote for Trump.
Yeah, she did. And she's an incredible reporter, and talk about like a community-based reporter. Like she knows these people because she's going to church with them each day, and they're coming and she's, you know, seeing them in the grocery store, in the Mexican market. It's like she really has her pulse in that town. And from the numbers I've seen, she's right. Like that there was a shift towards Trump, including among you know, the many Latinos in Dennis and Iowa. And I do think, yeah, a lot of it's just, I mean, a lot of it's the economy is a losing issue for Democrats. And the suddenly like that sort of like, oh, like if you're pro-immigrant, vote for us. They just lost that allure. And so, yeah, like what else were they going to win with then?
Could they get that back? Or is that kind of a lost cause now?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to see a couple more election cycles, like to really understand what the attitude is there. Because historically, like I said, like immigration is not a top issue, but it is a consequential one and did motivate a lot of Democratic votes. So I don't think Democrats should say we're definitely abandoning that approach. I think it's going to take more research and thought into, you know, just and meeting with people, hearing what they want, and just seeing how the world changes in the next few years to see what you do with that issue. But like this demographic anxiety, the sense that the world's really changing, who my neighbors are is really changing, like who is in this country, who is it? Like that's, there's so much flux and I can't really predict what my life will look like next year or in 10 years. That causes people a lot of anxiety. And it's not just immigrants crossing the border. It's like, you know, people moving from California to Austin, Texas. It's people, you know, like factory towns hollowing out. And I think that immigration is one of the most, it's like the lightning rod for that feeling of discomfort and fear of the future. And so I think Democrats really need to find a way to get on top of that and be like, hey, the world is changing and that's scary. And you don't have to be scared because we're going to take care of you. Like whatever happens next, like we got you.
And the you in this case, and I think this is one of the things your reporting has pointed out over the course of the year, the you includes a lot of Latinos who are American citizens who consider themselves part of the American story and are concerned about the future of America.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I'll get identity politics for a second. Like I'm Mexican on my dad's side and Italian American on my mom's side. Like my ancestors came from Sicily through Ellis Island. Right. And so like, I sort of see two immigration stories in my own, just, you know, what I hear at Christmas, what I hear at Thanksgiving. And, why do Italian Americans basically like the word for them is white people, right? They're white people now in a way that they were never black people, to be sure. Right. Like they always had rights above black people in this country. Like they were never oppressed at that level, even close to it. But they weren't really accepted into whiteness. And now they are. And so people often like look at Mexicans and say, like, that's happening now with Latinos. Like, I solved it. Like, they're becoming white and they're becoming sort of part of the mainstream American culture. And that's sort of the dynamic. And historically, that hasn't happened because of what the sociologist Tomás Jiménez calls racial recharge. And that's just, I'll just describe it really quickly this way, which is like, in my life, I grew up in California and lived in Texas for a lot of years. You know, in my life, if I went out on the street and I went and go and I got like a sandwich and then I went to a restaurant or went to a movie theater or something, like, it's very rare that I'd bump into somebody who just arrived here from Italy, like somebody who's speaking Italian or speaking Italian accent and is like cooking Italian food at home and going to an Italian language church. Like, I don't run into that many people. Every day of my life, like, I don't know, a day has gone by in my life where I haven't run into a Mexican person who's like pretty recently immigrated or like immigrated like a year ago or 5 years ago or really just got here. And they're going to a Spanish language church and they're cooking Mexican food at home and they have Mexican friends and family and they go back to Mexico. And so like the sort of Mexicanness is just so much more present in this country and will continue to be for a long time. I do think rates of Mexican immigration specifically are going down, but that sort of element of like connection with your home culture, with Latin America, is still really present. And so I don't think that like Latinos are going to wholesale to sort of assimilate, incorporate, and just like be like the Italians or the Irish. I think that's if that's happening, it's a much longer term trend and doesn't really describe what we're showing on the short term. So that's all my big wind up towards the point, which is that, that all said, I think you are right that there's a significant population of them who do just kind of want to stop being, I don't know, like they're proud to be Mexican, but they're like, that's not really like why I vote or how I see myself. Like, I'm American and I care about the economy. I care about the war in Ukraine. I care about, you know, like our healthcare policy. Like, I care about transportation. Like, I just like, I'm like, you, when you go to white voters, like you appeal to them on these policy issues. Can you do that for me too? Like, it can stop just being like, saying like you're Mexican, so vote like a Mexican. Like, that's, I think there's a big population of people who just don't want to be talked to that way.
When you're writing stories like this that kind of go against some of the conventional grain, you know, and identifying a problem that a lot of people maybe either don't realize is there or don't want to see, do you find that there's an appetite from editors and from readers for these stories, which you've been doing all year?
Yeah, there's appetite within readers, but also writing the sort of hard truth of sort of unexpected things. People read it, you know, do they like reading it? That's a question, but they definitely read it. And I'll say with editors, 100%, if you, this, like, I think that that's just the, I'm a freelancer right now, and I think that the secret sauce for pitching a story is always, this is unexpected. Like, you see the headline, and you see the deck, and you don't know what the article's going to tell you. Like, you read the lead, and you're like, I need to keep going, because I need to understand what this article's telling me. I think there's too much reporting on Latinos and Latino vote that, like, I know exactly what this article is going to say because I read the headline and I just have no need to click on that.
Jack, thank you so much for making the time today.
Yeah, thank you.
The Kicker is brought to you by the Columbia Journalism Review and produced by Amanda Dara. I'm your host, Josh Hirsch.